About the Campbell. Did it? I got it. Campbell appearing minute. Is it hitting him?
God. Hello there. Is that Eddie?
Oh, hello. Who's that, Professor?
Yeah, man. What's happening there in England?
Oh, damn good to hear you, Helby. Nothing of tall flavor.
Good morning, Winter Park. You're listening to WPRK 91.5, Winter Park. And we'd like to welcome you to Punkonomics. And today, we're going to start introducing our host, Dr. Benjamin Balick. How are you doing, Doctor?
Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning. I gotta first apologize that I got the cold that's running around, so I got a bit of a nasal voice or something, but I'm gonna do my best.
Awesome. And just to tell you a little bit about Punkonomics, we're going to be here every Friday at 9 a.m. all the way up to 10 p.m., and we're going to be discussing issues about economics, world events, and other good things that usually troubles your mind, but you can't figure out because your politicians are lying to you. Anyway, moving right along, we're going to start our discussion. Today, we're going to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the presidential debate and the 47%, which was not brought up during the debate, along with certain other things that are pretty annoying and that should be brought up in debates. Anyway, Professor Balick, could you give us a little information here about yourself? First of all, what do you do for a living? We know that you are a professor, but what is your expertise?
Well, I'm an economist. I got my PhD at Carolina, UNC Chapel Hill. So I'm pretty proud of that. Great school. Shout out to all the people who were there. I've been working for 10 years here at Rollins College in the Econ Department. We do some interesting things. We like to think so. The students think so, too. So that means we are, I suppose. And in fact, you know, we do a lot of the things we're going to do on the show in the class. That's how this whole idea started, where a student said, why don't we take this to the air? And I said, sure, if somebody is able to manage me, please. And Jesse kind of came up and did it for me, so I thank him for it, and he's the boss here. Now, what else? Ooh, before I forget, because I'm forgetful, you know, professors, we have the right. One thing is that, please, we wanted to make this interactive. So I've already been soliciting my friends and friends of friends on Facebook, mostly, to come to our page, Punkonomics, and say what you want to discuss, make comments, argue, yell, whatever you want. We have very thick skins. Hope you do, too. Nothing's taboo. We'll try and be honest and respectful with any kind of position. We really are. Huh? So go for it. Go for it. And also, I see Jesse has a little paper in his hand. I'm guessing he's going to present, but I'm going to kind of, you know, I'm going to stick my foot in it a little bit and present. Ex-student, wonderful alumni. Alumnus.
Alumnus is
one of those things like aluminum
singular.
With us foreigners, you know, we can't properly pronounce. So you'll have to excuse me. But Chris Garlock, he's econ graduate and then Cromer School graduate and now just an intellectual at large.
Always a student.
Always a student, right? Well, that's the goal, isn't it? So we have him here as our very first guest to help us launch this thing. So there, time for me to shut up.
Well, thanks for that intro, Dr. Balick. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be at WPRK. Looking forward to our topics today. So you guys, I'll throw it back to Jesse.
Yeah.
Throw it back.
Jesse's the boss.
Great. Okay, so let's just get down to it. Dr. Balak, first question for you. Obviously, you watched the debate because this morning you were smiling at me, and I'm sure you saw that I was breathing fire and smoke coming out of my ears. Give us your opinion, objective opinion, of course, about what happened during this debate. Do you really think that Obama was just holding back, or do you think he was just playing the game with Romney?
Oh, God, starting it all with depressing stuff, but yeah, you know, it's the dismal science, right? That's why we are called that, economists. Well, first, objective. I'm not objective. Who is, you know? In fact, I think anybody who claims to be objective is somewhat lying to you. It's impossible to be objective. We all have our baggage. We all have our ideologies. We all interpret stuff. If you'll excuse being a little scholarly here, but Friedrich Nietzsche famously said that, you know, there's, wait, let's see if I quote him right, so I don't butcher the thing, that there's only data, there is no such thing as fact. There's only data and interpretation of data. So we're all interpreting, that's just the nature of the beast. Having said that, it was pretty disappointing. I had fun, actually, you know, tweeting and cracking jokes with students and alumni, I got it right, and general friends during the debate, which I watched on Xbox. A couple of nice jokes.
That's nice of them to cover that, I mean.
Yeah, they do. Last time I watched that.
It's a demographic right there.
Yeah, with the Curiosity landing last time I watched on the Xbox live event app. In fact, it's interestingly enough, maybe if we're talking about Xbox, the numbers, you know how they do all those, like everybody does that for years now. I think CNN invented it. It's kind of poll the public, right? Well, these numbers, these numbers seem to be overwhelmingly Obama. I'm guessing that was a demographic thing.
Yes, it was, but of course, as you know, and you actually are expert on this topic, the media and the propaganda of it, you're teaching me quite a bit in that class. I feel that there is a lot of propaganda behind the scenes here, because it just seems to me that it's just too quaint that the reaction by the liberal was very ecstatic, yet the polls seem to represent something completely different. Give us your take on that.
It's a horse show, right? I mean, it's terrible. It's a circus of the macabre. I mean, it's like, who was, Romney was better because he was more smiley. Obama seemed kind of bored and agitated. Romney was kind of aggressive in a good way, though, not in a bad way. What are we talking about here, you know? Like Jersey Shore? Oops, could I even say that? Because it's like an endorsement, a commercial endorsement. I'm new to this, sorry. Really, you know, what were the facts? Not a lot of facts came in. I'm not even excited about all the fact checkers like going into the minute details of he said it's not exactly this, it's not exactly that. Listen. Let me cut to the chase, as I understand it. You have two main parties. Both of them represent basically the same people, though they pretend to represent different people. Why do they represent the same people? Because they're funded by the same people. The podcast online commentator was very good. You can learn a lot from him. Doug Henwood pointed out several times already, and recently again, that, well, you know, whatever Obama thinks, feels, whatever the Democratic base thinks and feels, they have to get paid, right? They have to pay billions of dollars to get elected. Otherwise, they end up like all the other little parties that most Americans don't even know about. You know, they're out there, by the way. You can vote for them if you wonder who are these strange people on your ballot, you know. Wonderful people, I'd say. But, So money talks. This is kind of economic principle, right? Who gets paid? Where do you find your funding? That's what's going to really determine policy. So whatever the intentions are, frankly, I don't particularly care. De facto, what happens is this both party are representing the same people, and therefore the policies are very similar.
Now, let's take it to Chris here. Chris, welcome to our station. You are an alumni from Rollins, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, okay, great. So,
Tell us, Chris, how did you feel when you saw the debate the other night? Were you alarmed? Were you disappointed? Did you expect this to happen? Did you even expect for Obama to go and agree with Romney on the Social Security?
Not quite. I mean, I always thought there was a bit of a divide there, but it did seem like Romney did sort of switch positions several times throughout, and I think that may have thrown Obama off a little bit as far as his preparedness. I know that a lot of people were saying, even me, that he wasn't quite prepared, didn't seem prepared, not enthusiastic, which might be attributable to that. But also could be, you know, he may not have had as much debate prepare time. I mean, Romney, this is pretty much what he was preparing for weeks. Obama's had to deal with some other things. You know, I'm not trying to polish that turd, but
sure.
As what John Stewart said last night or the night before.
No,
but there's those things to take into account.
I don't want to defend my president. I mean, he is my president. I already voted for him. FYI, Obama, I've got your back. But it seems to me that you also have to look at the fact that he is an attorney. Most attorneys, they keep a quiet, subdued.
He was very attitude. Professorial last night.
Yes, exactly. I think maybe, and I'm really hoping this is what it is that he just basically wanted to see what Romney had in his arsenal so then he can come back and completely butcher him. Now, personally, I would have preferred that he butchered him right there and then so we can just move on to the Christmas holidays and, you know, call it a day. But obviously, people are into the drama, and who knows? Maybe it's all a show like Professor Balak says.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think it's trademarkable or anything, but I tell all my students, you know, I'm an equal opportunity hater, you know?
Really, yes, you know. You are. Yes, you are.
So what? So, yeah, so they do pull stunts, like in more like in, courtroom TV. So what was it? As much as I followed yesterday, it's all Big Bird jokes, right?
You know? Oh, my gosh. Right.
And it's, to me, it's a little sad that that's what, you know, if you want to attack Romney, there's things to attack him.
Exactly. What about his total abdication almost of his tax plan? Go for it.
But in the beginning, Romney said something that Obama agreed with. And that was really the thing. They said what's going down. You know? They said, under my presidency, I'm not quoting exactly, but something to the effect, under my presidency or your presidency, Mr. President, Romney says, I'm paraphrasing, the wealthy, the top income gainers will do fine. Yep, that's about it. Can we now switch to something better on television? Was my comment at the time. You know? South Park was coming up. You know?
Right. Well, it kind of seemed like he was not knowledgeable about that, about maybe how that would come across. And so later on, it seemed like he was—he made it a point to say his plan wouldn't raise taxes on the wealthy, or it somehow wouldn't alter the burden of taxes on anybody, which seems hard to believe. But I think that's kind of obvious. The main plank is to cut taxes on the wealthy. There's no to say that you're not going to do that is.
Yeah, I mean, a lot
of
people were accusing correctly, I think, Romney for, you know, saying whatever, really, because it was certainly outside of, he sounded great, he was likable, all of those things, but yeah, that's the game, you know, it doesn't matter what your platform really is, who even knows what your platform is? Obama didn't do what he said he would do. Why were you expecting Romney to do what he said he would do? In some ways, one could say that, you know, Obama pandered to people who are desperate for very good reason, and it's a majority in this country. The poor, the middle class, the used to be middle class, etc. Things are very bad for the vast majority. So he tells us what we want to hear, and then Romney does the same thing, really. And then he moved to the center, as quite expected. That's quite normal. Both of them can count on their fringe to vote for them, more or less. Though there's a matter of enthusiasm, right? So Obama has to enthuse a certain demographic, and so does Romney, but I think probably Romney has a better chance at it because his extreme base is self-enthusiastic, if you can say that, you know? When a lot of young people and poor people are just disgusted with everything. But again, you know, they didn't talk about much. It was kind of boring, almost rambling on. I mean, I'm supposed to be an economist, right? I couldn't keep on with it. I was like, my mind was drifting, again, to jokes. It was just like white noise.
No, Professor Balak, before the show started, I was actually talking to one of our DJs, and he asked for my opinion about the what they're trying to sell. Now, I don't want to date myself on this program, but I do remember that during the Reagan era, a similar economic plan was being offered. And what happened was is that the middle class, the working people, wound up paying a little bit more taxes. Good example is the waiters and waitresses. You know, all of a sudden their tips started getting taxed.
Yeah.
The credit cards, we couldn't deduct any more credit cards, but the businesses could. What is the sole purpose of this? I mean, obviously the trickle-down economics didn't work. Do you see the same similar situation happening here, or is there something completely different that we're unaware of and it might turn out to be negative? Or, you know, you tell us, is it going to be a positive? How do you look at things?
Well, you know, maybe it's time for me to pull a Romney, if I may, and negate what I said 10 minutes ago, quoting Nietzsche. There are such things as facts. They're not absolute, but there are things that are closer to being fact. Hey, one of the most important people in Rollins' history is John Dewey, right? If you read the pamphlet or the website, I think they mentioned he was here. He was articulating in the 30s, articulating part of liberal arts education in general in a conference here. Wonderful. Well, he coined a term called the warrantable assertion. Basically, the idea that I'm not absolutely sure about anything, that is the scientific method, if you will, but some things are pretty close to being sure about, like the Earth being pretty round, for example, things like that. So, trickle down, you say. I'll date myself too, you know. I was an undergrad in the late 80s, right? And those were the, you know, late Reagan era, it was obvious to pretty much everybody that trickle down doesn't work. It's pretty clear why it doesn't work. It never has, it never will. There's absolutely no reason to think that it will. you know, yet it's still, to me, it's a shock that is still discussed. We were taught, not by liberal professors actually back then, but more of conservative Reagan kind, how the Laffer curve was a mistake. Cutting taxes does not raise government revenue. I can rattle out a whole bunch of ideas.
What happened between then and now?
Well, I mean, people talk about America moving to the right, but I don't even like to call it right and left, because I think of my good right-wing friends who have different ideologies than my left-wing friends, but are not insane, you know?
That's very true.
I mean, we discuss on Facebook, you have a lot of right-wing friends, you know? Mm-hmm. We have good productive arguments, etc. This is kind of the postmodern era. This is kind of no rationality, no fact, anything you want to pull out, you know, it goes, so long as you have enough money to back it up. And make funny movies about it. So it's very difficult to try and think rationally anymore.
Now, Chris, you're out in the world trying to make ends meet. You know, obviously you graduated from Rollins, a prestigious school, kind of give you that edge as far as work. Has it worked out for you in this environment, or are you struggling, or?
I mean, it's been tough. It's been interesting. I was working, I had two different jobs after I graduated from the business school. I was working at Hurley as well as working at Rollins. Then I did I got a job over in Africa working actually, managing a restaurant. Then I came back here and working for Rollins again. And I am actively looking for other work, and it is tough in this environment, but I feel that I have a little bit of an edge.
I say, so you basically had to outsource yourself to another country. You know,
self-outsourced, yes.
That's one of the things I was telling our previous DJ, that it seems like pretty soon we're going to start outsourcing ourselves to other countries because there is no jobs here. I mean, basically, that's what it boils down to. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, those countries don't have the same work ethics or rights that we have here. Of course, probably by the time we come back to our country, there won't be any work rules at all. Tell us one thing. Do you see a imminent change in the future? You know, once Obama wins, and I'm just being positive, folks. Nobody really knows how it's going to happen.
It's probably the smart bet, I suppose.
And my small little mind somewhat delusional. Well,
there was a jobs report just like about an hour ago. I should look that up.
Oh yeah.
But
oh,
okay. That might play a big factor.
Yes, absolutely.
Probably more than the debate, but
absolutely.
No, these fluctuations have been going on for several years now. I mean, I still remember it was January 2009, right? So a couple of months after the surprise crash, the surprise that was predicted in detail for over 30 years by both right-wing and left-wing economists. You know, oh, how long before the real estate prices go up again, you know? And I'm like, because I'm the economist, right? So I have to answer these kind of questions. And I said, well, probably never. And everybody rolled their eyes, you know, there goes Benny again, all, you know, pessimistic, just realistic, I'd say. But you know, you're saying something about outsourcing ourselves, I think is, again, another problem that is nonpartisan, in the sense that maybe one of the biggest issues I have with the similarities of the two big parties that annoys me the most. Note I used the word annoyed. Yeah, I'm working hard. I've not used any dirty word, and we're 25 minutes into the show. So
that's,
you know,
you deserve some
pinching my leg there, you know. but which annoys me tremendously is the notion that precisely we compete on the global market through making our labor cheaper. Essentially, both parties are telling us the same long-term globalized future. You want to keep your jobs, you better compete with Chinese slave labor. And we're doing some progress in the if anything is happening, it's that, you know, less conditions, less benefits, lower wages for the majority of Americans since the mid-70s, and accelerated drop in wages in the past 10 years. Etc. Obama, Bush, doesn't really matter when it comes to that sort of thing. Or Clinton, for that matter, by the way. Clinton has beginning to develop the same kind of cult like Reagan, you know?
Right.
We forget. So that is a major issue. The promise back in the 70s was that, yeah, maybe we don't produce steel and coal anymore so much, and we leave that to the poorer countries, but we're going to offer these service industry, knowledge industry, with our excellent education, you know, remember that, and infrastructure, oh, remember that? All of those wonderful things. Now that's been given up, you know, that's the true long-term betrayal of promise to the next generation. Let's not even start on the climate. Maybe we have to talk about that another time.
Okay, well, you know, let's give the folks a little bit of time to think about what we just discussed, and hopefully we'll start getting some phone calls here. Oh, okay. I guess we are starting to get some phone calls. So for those of you that are driving out there, we'd like to remind you that this is Punkonomics, and it is on every Friday from 9 to 10 here on WPRK, the best in basement radio. And here's a song from the past, and of course this is food for thought for all of you who are in your cars driving to work or trying to figure out how you're going to get that next paycheck.
And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here? And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife. Same as it ever was.
same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Water dissolving and water remounting. There is water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water.
Okay, that was Iggy Pop with Lust for Life. And before that, you heard the Talking Heads with Once in a Lifetime. I return to our show here at Punkonomics with Professor Balak and Chris Garlock. My name is Jesse. I'm co-hosting the show. And we remind you that this is WPRK, Winter Park, 91.5, and the best in basement radio. Dr. Balak, we're back. And as we were discussing when we went off the air and was playing some tunes to keep everybody awake out there who's driving, let's talk about the jobs report. Chris, you want to give us a little update on that, and we can let Professor Balak hammer away on that report?
Sure. It came out about an hour ago. And what it showed was a total of 114,000 jobs were created in September. And that includes 10,000 positive jobs being 10,000 positive jobs being created in government, the first time in a long time, and 104,000 created in the private sector. And what happened with the unemployment rate is it actually fell 0.3% from August, where it was 8.1, and now it's 7.8. And so, in my opinion, there's not enough job growth in the past month, even with the revisions from the two previous months, for a total of 80,000 to warrant, you know, that significant type of drop. So I'm guessing there's probably more discouraged workers out there, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's important, really. I mean, the we have, and again, you know, in my equal opportunity hating position, my Obama supporter friends will hate me for this. So we'll make a lot to do about that. We are in trouble. We've seen a little better over the past few years. On the other hand, I don't want to diss him too badly because he does do some things that are correct according to understood economic policy, but it's not really giving us the significant change, structural change that would shift us out of this mess. Again, equal opportunity. Romney doesn't end at all, not even begins to. Discouraged workers, what Chris was just saying, it's really important. We see this decline in unemployment, and this is not because people are getting jobs, though, yeah, you're right, Chris was just telling us that some jobs were created, but very few.
Just barely enough for the population, yeah. The growth in
growth in population, market. Absolutely. So people getting into the labor market. So there's no real good news here. In fact, it's bad news. People are just giving up. People are going, hopefully they have some kind of support, the barter, helping each other survive. But poverty is tremendous, growing, mm-hmm. has been growing for a long time, and certainly dramatically in the past 10 years. That allows me again to get to come back to the debate. Some of the fact checking against Romney was that he mentioned and blamed Obama for it, and in that sense, excuse me, that's a lie, for having over 20% unemployment. And many of the fact checkers were saying, wait a minute, that's not the case. It's 8%, and not even anymore. In fact, Romney was right here, though his allocation of blame was inappropriate. That measure, when you really want to know how many people are looking for a job, perhaps not going to the employment agency every week because it's useless, they've been going for 4 years and there's nothing for them, there's just simply no jobs that fit their qualifications and no whatsoever. People who are employed but they used to have a decent job and now they're working part-time, you know, for tips, with minimum wage and three jobs, what have you, no benefits, they're gainfully employed now, problem solved. If you add all the real unemployment, if you will, and fire up questions on Facebook and we'll direct you to the exact numbers and structures if you are interested, remember, you know, just ask, we'll do our best. Then it's right, we do have over 20% unemployment, just like we have over 20% people who are dirt poor. And I know maybe some of them have cable, but you know, they're still dirt poor.
So. That is very true. And that's one of the reasons why with this whole 47% issue, and that's one of the reasons why there is so many, why that number is so big. There's just simply so many people that have so low income they don't qualify after all the exemptions, the deductions to meet that threshold to pay federal income tax. I think it's about half. Let me see here. Yeah, of the people that don't pay federal income tax, half of them actually do have jobs. They pay payroll tax. The other half are either elderly or, you know, they have an income under 20,000. And so a lot of them are probably students as well. So, you know, when you look at these demographics of who exactly this 47%, you know, I think that some people have a vision in their minds of what those people are, but it's really a variety of different people. A lot of them, frankly, in Romney's base.
Yeah, majority, actually.
The elderly.
Facts. Yeah. And more conservative, poorer states. But if I remember from the article you posted, what was it, last week or the week before, it was a very good one with graphical representation, which is nice. So, again, trying to post all of these things and make more detailed information available outside of the show itself. If I remember, the bottom line of that was when you do the calculation, though, who are really these takers, according to what is ostensibly a conservative idea, you know, the takers in the economy, they were about less than 3%, not 47%, but less than 3%.
Right.
And then we can add to that very wealthy people who pay very little or no tax, you know, including corporations that pay very little or no tax. Last night we had a little bit of a discussion on the topic, by the way, where one student, actually of mine currently, talked about the flat tax. And I was thinking that, yeah, I mean, you could make a flat tax that works, simplified. You could make it non-regressive. Regressive in economic speak means that you know, negative Robin Hood, if you will. Regressive is when you take from the poor and give to the rich, the kind of policies we've had for 30 years. Another ex-student mentioned actually abolish all corporate tax. But make a rational income tax, and you can, all the people pulling income out of the corporation will end up paying their share there. It's a complicated question, but the point I think that escapes a lot of the discussion on this is that we can solve our problems in different ways from different perspectives. The problem is that, to go back to the political system, that's not what anybody's doing, really. We're pundits. We don't hear economists talk about these things on the mainstream media, certainly. We're boring, I suppose. But maybe also because you'll be surprised at how much right-wingers, left-wingers, we agree about the facts. We have different solutions to them, but we could come to an amicable a compromise. The problem is with a political system that's run by money. The temptation for the ultra wealthy, not the 1%, but the 0.1% who rule the world, and this is not a conspiracy theory here, they are tempted to rule mightily, just like in the pre-Enlightenment days when they did. But then we had Adam Smith and the Founding Fathers and the American Revolution, and we brought them down, we cut them to size, and we had capitalism. And capitalism requires a reasonable distribution of income to function. Capitalism is a bourgeois operation, and it is based on the, may I say, Christian virtue of prudence, balance. Ooh. Aristotle wasn't a Christian, he came up with it first, but, you know.
Now, you hit a topic there, and I'm going to take you back to the propaganda side of it. And this is beyond me, okay? It seems to me that the people who are most affected by the decisions of the politicians, when they go out and vote, they usually vote for the guy that's going to do them the most harm. Now, could you explain that? Because I'm a psych major, and I can't put my finger on it. I mean, every election, it seems like the people that are living in poverty usually vote for the guy that's, you know, his only interest is to make the wealthy even more wealthy. Could you break that down for us?
Well, they're being played. Before the Enlightenment, the market system, the modernity, the peasants overwhelmingly, in feudal societies in Europe, the peasants overwhelmingly supported the system, thought it was the way things are. and the way they should be. And the best they could hope for was a generous master, you know, that doesn't beat them too hard. And seriously, you know, and that kept going. You know, they believed that if the master wouldn't be in charge, it would be chaos because peasants can't run their own lives. It took a big upheaval. The end of feudalism, and it involved wars, and my students are gonna, you know, oh God, not that again. But yeah, the Hundred Year War, and a lot of major upheavals for this, the emergence of the commercial classes, the business people, who back in those days were forces overwhelmingly of progress and social justice. That sounds kind of funny today. But in the beginning of the Enlightenment, we are now living at its end, scary stuff, we had to have that change of class structure and the rise of these business classes, non-peasants. Peasants were inherently conservative and not in political conservative liberal, just in the sense of not wanting to change the system in the, you know, in the definition of the word, not the politics. So now we have a somewhat of a similar situation. Maybe, like I said, at the end of the feudal system, there was this moroseness, this necessity for shaking things up in order to come up with a better, newer system, which eventually ended up the market system, later called capitalism. That did a lot of good, you know, the data here again. Not everybody benefited, but overwhelming good over its 200, 250 years of lifespan. Mm-hmm. The scariest thing for me today, and I wake up with a cold sweat, you know, ask my wife, in the middle of the night, is that this is the end of the Enlightenment. We no longer think about facts, we no longer believe in science, we go with our gut emotional feelings, we don't trust specialists, we have government by emotion. Like you said, both parties are playing these emotions, but after that, business as usual.
Well, you know, the way I look at things, and you know, that's a very good explanation. But you are a professor here, and I'm sure that, you know, you do have a strong opinion about education and how it relates to the economy. You know, it seems to me, and most of us here on campus look at it this way, the more education we get, the better trained we are. Hence, any kind of product or anything that we do in the job, workplace, becomes better, maybe number one in the world. Please explain to the audience why it's so important that they do sponsor and tell the politicians to put their money in education versus tax deductions for the corporate wealthy.
Well, I mean, I agree, you know, but money's not enough, you know. Education is, once again, to use the word conservative, not in the conservative liberal political divide, but in the English definition of the word. Education systems are conservative, have been. You know, in the 19th century, in the midst of the Industrial Revolution, when the top schools in Britain, Cambridge, Oxford, were still insisting that well-educated gentleman needs to basically know his Greek poems by heart, classics. Now, I love the classics, don't get me wrong. But they refused, they thought it was vulgar, that's literally the word they used, to add commerce and engineering into their curriculum. It tends to be conservative, but perhaps it's rightly conservative. We don't want to go crazy with it, because it takes many years to accumulate the kind of what we call human capital of expertise and methods of teaching that led to American education system being, and probably in many ways still is, at the very top. No, there's competition today, you know, and competition, again, from a market perspective, is a good thing. But how are we going to compete with it? We absolutely need to capitalize on our advantages. And frankly, I'm a little skeptic with STEM. I have two kids also here in Florida, not a simple matter, and I'll tell you outright. First of all, maybe they're listening, my kids. They're being homeschooled now. First they thought it was going to be wonderful, and now they realize they're working their years off, but good for them. Well, money's not enough, structural changes, using new technologies, but based on the expertise of those who are in the trenches. There's a tremendous amount of buzzwords and, you know, talk about these things by people who don't know what they're talking about.
Well, I got a song that would definitely bring people's mind into point here. you know, we can look at all the economics solutions, and hopefully that one of them makes sense. But in the old-fashioned way, I guess I'll let the Clash bring a little message to you.
Well, we'd like to welcome you back to Punkonomics with Dr. Balak. And today we have our guest, Chris Garlock, and my name is Jesse. I am the co-host of the show. And Professor Balak was saying that, you know, the topic of education is a long one. It does apply to economics. It does affect everybody in many ways, more than you could possibly think. And Professor Balak, you know, next time we convene here, or I should say next Friday at 9 o'clock, what topics do you want to tackle?
Well, maybe education is not a... education is not a bad idea, really, because it is critical on so many levels. In fact, to tie it into what we were saying a moment ago, this notion that all we are promised is to compete with, you know, third world slave labor as our future, otherwise they'll outsource our jobs, because already most technological actual programming, engineering has been outsourced a long time ago. And not because we don't need it, but because, again, our education system is not able to provide the skill we need. Well, it's key. When back in the 70s we were promised, don't worry about the fact that manufacturing is going to China, you guys are all going to be computer programmers and content creators and artists and make a great living, that depends obviously critically on the education system. So it's really a major issue. And the rhetoric, the political rhetoric about it, is one of the most nastily propagandized, full of lies and ideologies and group interests of all. So it's rife.
Now, we want to thank our guest, Chris. Chris, thanks a lot for all that information on the
employment statistics.
We definitely are very happy and proud that you graduated from Rollins College and you're doing your social responsibility part and coming back and telling us how it is out there.
Yeah.
We also like to let everybody know that we're going to be here every Friday from 9 to 10 on this program called Punkonomics, where Dr. Balak will be tackling the issues of economics and other things that you may not even take into consideration. In a couple of minutes, you will be enjoying another DJ. And before we get off the air, Professor Balak, would you like to give a shout out to anybody out there in particular? Do you want to taunt any of the politicians to come out here?
Well, we're looking into options, but you know, well, the hell with them. Can I say that? No, my yes, shout out. Okay, hell is all right still. But you know, let's shout out, yeah, to my students, to all the ex-students, to the people I know and not even sure that I do know on Facebook, with whom I have many a wonderful discussion, argument, and I hope that this show will generate a whole bunch of other people. Like I said, bring it on. You know, I welcome it. Facebook being the primary. I do more Facebook than Twitter, though I did, that's also an option. You know, family, friends, and everything. Let's keep this argument going. Only hope in this world is to take back the discussion, take back the rhetoric.
Well, in wrapping it up, we leave you with The Clash. Should I stay or should I go now? Have a good day, folks.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on, let me know. This indecision's bugging me.
Indecision, they molest us.
If you don't want me, set me free.
Say no more, careless, you got me.
Exactly whom I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So you gotta let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So you gotta let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Feel honestly left out? Are you tired of your politicians lying to you? Do you want to make sense of today's economy? Well, join us here for a new innovative program called Punkonomics with Dr. Balak. Every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on WPRK 91.5, the best in basement radio.
Winter Park, Florida. I am John Lydon here of Public Image Limited. You may also know me as Ron, and I may know you as W.
Hey, do you feel good on the